Welcome to Binge Breakthrough, the podcast designed to help you finally break through the barriers that keep you stuck feeling out of control around food. I'm Master Certified Coach Jane Pilger, and I want you to know that no matter how long you've been struggling or what you've tried, food freedom is possible, and I'm here to show you how. After years of therapy, eating disorders treatment, restrictive diets, and reading all the books, I was still stuck in the on-again, off-again cycle of restricting and binging until I was able to see it all from a new perspective that changed everything. Each week, I will share the strategies, tools, and mindset that allowed me to overcome my decades-long battle with binge eating. Your journey to body trust starts now. Let's dive in. Hello, trusted listener. Welcome to Binge Breakthrough. I consider you a trusted listener because I trust that you are listening to this podcast for a reason. I trust that you are going to hear something insightful and impactful on your journey with food. So today's episode was inspired by a recent interview I had with Cheryl Pankhurst for her podcast, Teen Minds Redefined. Now, I want to give a disclaimer in this. I am not a parent. I do not have children. So I understand that I am about to talk to you about what to do with your kids if you have concerns with them, how to talk to them about food and about their body. And I realize it may sound a little like, who are you to tell me this if you don't have kids? I am not an expert. Again, I'm not a parent and I don't have kids. But what I do have is a lot of experience with clients telling me their stories, what their parents told them and how it impacted them, and also clients' experiences and challenges with their own children. So I am the first to admit I am not an expert on this topic. But I would encourage you, listen, if you do have concerns, listen to this episode, and just like I tell you with everything else, see what resonates with you. If you hear something and something resonates, then that is for you. If you hear something and it doesn't resonate, you don't like it, you don't agree with it, then leave it behind. So I share this because I think it's valuable information and it's based on the experience that I do have. So I hope that it is helpful for you. All right. If you are concerned about your child and specifically what is happening with them, with food or with their body, the first question that I encourage you to ask yourself is just to get really clear with yourself on why. Why am I concerned? It sounds like a very simple question, and it is. I mean, it is literally a one-word question. Why? Why am I concerned? Here's the reason why I encourage you to ask this question is awareness, right? We're always talking about awareness is so important. We want to understand the reasons why. Why am I concerned? What am I noticing? What signs and symptoms am I noticing? And why am I concerned? If you are concerned about, let's see, you might be noticing specific behaviors. You might be noticing specific behaviors around food. You might be noticing maybe they're not eating as much. Maybe they are moving their food around, but not really eating. Maybe their behaviors, their choices have changed significantly recently around food. Maybe you're noticing comments about their body. Maybe you're concerned about weight loss or weight gain. Here's what's really interesting about the teen years specifically, if we're talking about teenagers. The teen years are challenging. They're challenging for a lot of reasons. Number one, hormones are increasing, right? We all know this. This is happening in the teen years. These increases in hormones will mean changes in the physical body. Our bodies are supposed to change over time. But here's what happens. The rate of change in our bodies, it's different. Our bodies change at different rates, different speeds, in different ways, and every body is different. And here's what happens. As the body starts to change, there can be a lot of alarm around it. This alarm can really happen at any point. So you might have a child whose body is maturing or changing, maybe at a faster rate than other bodies around them. So this can be challenging when it's like their body starts to change before others. So then there is naturally, we all compare ourselves. And if we then start comparing ourselves to other bodies and these bodies aren't really changing, then there may be this kind of desire to, I don't want these changes in my body. I don't want to have now more fat on my body or more curves, more whatever is happening with these changes in hormones. Or you might be on the other side. You might be somebody who hormonally is not developing as fast as others. And so then there may be other issues around that and comparison. Here's something that's really important to know. And I think a lot of people don't know this and they don't realize this. A lot of disordered eating begins around times of significant change. So this might be the teen years when you have your first significant hormonal changes where the body is starting to change. And we do have literal physical shape changes in the body. So in the teen years is when we have a lot of disordered eating start. Sometimes it starts before that. When it starts earlier, typically what I find is there's one of two reasons. Number one, we may have a parent who is concerned about the size of their child's body. And because of that, they think, this child needs to eat less. I need to, they may not even use these words, but I need to put my child on a diet and really watch and monitor and control what they eat so that they don't become too large. They might even get this advice from a doctor. Maybe they make these decisions on their own, or a doctor tells them, you really need to watch and monitor and control and restrict what they're eating. When this happens at a younger age, this can absolutely start disordered eating. Sometimes at a younger age, the other thing that happens is sometimes just a response to trauma. We won't go too much into that in this episode, but what I find when disordered eating starts in earlier years, one of those two things has happened. Either that child is getting messages that their body is not okay. It's generally those messages are, your body is too big, and therefore we need to control your intake. It's either that or it's a response to trauma, generally. There can be, of course, other exceptions. But then the next time that disordered eating often happens is in the teen years. We have all these changes in the body and in hormonally. Also, then the next time that there's a significant increase or jump in disordered eating is college. I have shared before that my disordered eating started, I was for sure on restrictive diets and trying to control my body in my teen years. But my binge eating did not start until my very first semester in college. And I struggled with binge eating all through college and continuing on for many, many more years beyond that. But college is an interesting time because when we go to college, number one, we're away from our primary attachments. And so sometimes that can absolutely be a challenge. We also are making our decisions around food often for the first time. Up until college, we've really just eaten what has been given to us at home. Our parents really have been making those decisions. And if there haven't been discussions around making those choices, why we make these choices, developing a relationship with food, then we go off to college and there can be a lot around there. Also, like in the case for me, I had a lot of big emotions when I went away to college. And I think this is true for many college students. And I didn't know what to do with them. I was not skilled in any emotional. I had zero emotional capacity. I did not know how to handle my emotions. I did not know what they were. I did not know how to name them. Did not know how to be with them. And that combined with the restrictive dieting in my teen years really set me up for that binging to start in college. Also, what happens in college a lot is sometimes, not everybody, but for some people, there may be an increase in going out or drinking and, you know, eating pizza at 2 o'clock in the morning and these types of things, which for some people can create weight gain, which then for some people creates a little bit of a freak out, then kind of leads into the restrictive dieting. So there can be a lot of things that go on here. Now, interestingly, and many people do not know this, but the next time that there is a high increase in episodes of disordered eating comes in the perimenopause and menopause phase of life. You might be listening to this. If you are like me, you might be smack dab in the middle of this phase of your life. It is true. Your body changes. Again, this is a time of significant hormonal change. So when we're in our teens, our hormones are increasing. Our body is changing. Now our hormones are decreasing. And again, our body is changing. Our bodies are supposed to get softer as we get older. We are supposed to put on some weight as we get older. We are no longer in the childbearing years. This is a change. Now, this doesn't mean we have to have these huge changes and we have to be miserable and there aren't things that we can do to manage and to work with the changes that happen in our bodies. I'm not saying that, but I am saying that for us to think that our bodies should look like they did when we were in our 30s, that is not the case. It is not reality. It is not how our bodies are designed to be. So many women are going through this time of perimenopause and menopause. And as their bodies change, they then go into disordered eating. They're trying to change. They're trying to get their body back to where it was before. And what do they do? What do they think? Well, the only thing I've ever known that has even worked temporarily has been restrictive diets. So let me go on a restrictive diet. Let me go do all of these other fads and these things. And for some people in the very short term, maybe they have some quote unquote success. Then they hold on to that. Well, I want that. It worked. I always tell people something didn't work if it wasn't sustainable. If you had some period of time where you went on some crazy restrictive diet and it quote unquote worked for, I don't know, 60 days, 6 months, whatever period of time it was, and then you were not able to sustain it, that did not work. Now, here's what happens. Coming back to the discussion with our kids, so many mothers are in this place right now. They are in the place of perimenopause or menopause. They are struggling with their own changes around their body. What happens? Their child sees their mother struggling. Their child sees the mom, whether she's not eating the same things that everybody else is eating, whether she's making comments about what she is or isn't eating, whether she's making comments about going shopping or not wanting to buy clothes. Maybe she's not getting in family pictures anymore. Maybe she's insisting that she's the one to take the pictures because she doesn't want to be in it. Maybe she's not going to the pool or putting on her bathing suit when everybody goes to the beach, whatever it is. If that is you, your child sees this. even if you are one of these moms who are so many moms who struggle with food, they know the challenges because they live them. And so many moms are like, I do not want this same situation for my child. And I am so careful about what I say to them. I am so careful about the conversation that I have around them and their food choices and their body and the things that I say to them. And I think that's amazing. That type of awareness is so powerful. And I want you to know your child sees you. If you struggle with food, if you struggle with your body, if you make comments about your body, if you are restricting food, if you are acting very inconsistently with your food, your child sees that. So one of the main things that we can do, yes, it's very important to think about what are we saying to our child, but more than the words, what message am I sending to my child about my own relationship with food, my body, my experiences, my choices? So it's really important for us to just see that. And again, not from a place of shame, not from a place of judgment. And it is very important that the words that you speak matter and your actions matter also. Now, here's some things that are very important not to do with your child. It is very important not to comment on their body size, whether we're talking weight gain or weight loss. Not commenting. And whether we're talking about your child, I will just go on a little side note here and say it is never helpful to comment on anyone's physical body size. Anyone, whether we're talking about a child or a friend or anyone, whether they've gained weight or they've lost weight. This is not helpful. I can remember for myself when I was at my worst in my eating disorder, at the time that I was at my most restrictive, I was underweight for myself. At that time, I got the most positive comments about my body. I cannot tell you how many people, how many stories I have heard, whether it is clients sharing their own story of back, the origin story of their disordered eating. Often it started when they were in school and they felt like they had excess weight that they wanted to lose. And they, this is how the story goes a lot. Over the summer, they decided they were going to go on a diet and they were going to eat less food. They were going to exercise more and they come back to school and they come back to school in the fall and they've lost a good amount of weight. And then they get complimented. Oh, you look so great. How did you do it? Then they get this message, oh, my value and my worth, it comes from the size of my body. So then what do they want to do? They want, oh, okay, well, I need to keep losing weight. I need to keep dieting. I need to keep this up because this is how I get attention. This is how I get validated. This is how I do that. And then they just stay in the cycle because that's what they're learning. So whether it is your child or anyone else, don't comment on their body. There's another thing not to do. Don't be the food police. Don't try to track their food. Don't try to limit or moderate the quantity or the choices. This is not helpful. Again, I will share some stories of whether it is clients or this is mostly clients or people that I have talked to hundreds of people about their own origin story. How did your disordered eating start? Here's a couple that just have stayed with me for so long. I can remember I actually met this woman And it was during my first round of intensive outpatient therapy at a local eating disorders treatment center. Her dad would tell her, if you get seconds on food, nobody will want to marry you. And this was when she was probably 12 when he started telling her this. This started her obsession with food, with not eating too much, with making sure that she was very controlled and restricted. She was in this intensive outpatient therapy for restrictive eating. Then there are so many stories that I hear from people who they were told in their family, well, your other siblings can have dessert, but you don't get dessert because you're overweight. You need to lose weight. Everyone else gets dessert, but you don't. This is not helpful. This again creates this message that, number one, your body is the source, the size of your body is your worth, is equal to your worth. We do not want to do this. Now, what are some signs you might want to look for? You might want to look for, maybe they're not eating. Maybe they're saying, oh, I already ate. I ate somewhere else. There's a lot of maybe excuses around not eating. Or maybe they're like trying to hide the food. Now, one of the signs can be hiding food in two ways. One could be hiding so that you don't have to eat it. Maybe we're feeding it to the dog. Maybe we're throwing it away. Maybe we're putting it in a napkin if we're going on the more restrictive side. But maybe the child is developing some kind of compulsive eating, binge eating tendencies. They might be hiding food, going to the pantry, pulling it out, hiding it, putting it in their room. Sometimes this happens. A lot of times, if there's hiding of food, this often happens when food has been limited in some way, when it is trying to be controlled or limited in some way. Again, this kind of goes back to the restriction episode. So you could listen to that. Significant changes in body weight, whether we're talking increases or decreases, significant changes. This can be a sign. Our bodies do change. And of course, with hormones and as we age, the size of our body does change. But if we're talking significant in a short period of time, this can also be a sign there's something going on. The child might be making a lot of comments about food, about choices, or about their body. Or there can be just significant shifts in their mood. So these are some signs. Okay, so I've told you what not to do, but what do I do? I love this prompt, this kind of question, this prompt. And it's this, help me understand. So we can have conversations. You want to have conversations with your child where you go in with curiosity, not judgment, not telling them they're doing something wrong or they're doing something bad or, you know, can't you just eat or just stop eating or those things are not helpful. And if you're listening to this podcast, you know these things. But I love the prompt, help me understand. If they're having a hard time with food in their body, they probably know. I can remember I knew so much. I didn't know so much, but I knew I was having a hard time. Now, they may not want to talk about it, especially with you. But what you can do is help them find an avenue of safety for communication. So if it's not you, maybe there's a family friend. Maybe a trusted resource. Maybe it's a physician. Maybe somebody else. But in having an initial conversation, we can find an avenue of safety. A lot of times people really want help or support, but they don't know where to go or who to ask. They may not want it from you, but that doesn't mean they won't be open or willing to get it from somewhere else. Now, last thing I want to say is when to communicate. If we're going to have this conversation with the child, like, help me understand. Here's what we got to know. We have to understand the brain. If they're in a place where their nervous system is kind of activated, maybe they're angry, maybe they're frustrated, or maybe they're just kind of shut down and depressed, they're in one of the survival states in their brain, it is going to be much harder to communicate with them and much harder for them to be open or receptive to anything. So if you can find a time when they are more open and more connected, they may be more receptive. Now, They may also just shut down when you mention it, and especially so if they feel like they're being judged. But let them know you will find them support. Ask them if they want to take part in figuring out what will be the best level of support for you, what resources, where do we want to go? You can do research into options for who to talk to. You can plant seeds. You can give them options and give them a choice. Choice is so important in this. We want them to be part of the discussion. We don't want to come in thinking, you're bad, you're doing something wrong. This has to stop. Like from this place of kind of judgment, we want to go in from a place of curiosity, from a place of empathy, from a place of love and concern and support. These are some tips for what you can do if you are concerned about your child. Again, I'm not an expert, but I do have experience of so many clients who have been through this, both with their own children and their own experience of what it was like for them as they, as a child, were struggling. So if this is you and you also struggled as a child, think about for yourself, what would I really have wanted? What would have been supportive to me? This can really help give you some insight into how you might want to approach this for yourself. This is big work. It's challenging work, but it's such important work. And I hope this has been a helpful resource for you. That's what I have for you today. I'll see you next week. Thank you for listening to Binge Breakthrough. If you would like a personal guide to walk you through the 8 solutions to end binge eating so that you can customize them for yourself and your unique situation, you have to join me for the Binge Breakthrough Blueprint. After just 8 weeks together, you will have a completely new relationship with yourself and with food. Find out more at bingebreakthrough.com/blueprint.